Hello, beautiful soul, and welcome to Unraveling. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and I am so honored to share this space with you today. Unraveling is a sacred space for you to come to when you feel the need to be nurtured, to be inspired, and witnessed in all the beautiful messiness of life. This is a place for honest conversations, real life emotions, and truth telling. The episodes are intended to be soothing and gentle, yet powerful and impactful, weaving the beautiful art of storytelling together with life lessons, practical tools, and a little bit of magic too. The journey of unraveling has many, many layers, and each of us are on our own unique path. My hope is that the words shared today will offer a spark of curiosity and a moment of resonance, as well as supporting you in your own beautiful explorations. Thank you for sharing this time with me. Let's dive in. Okay, welcome to Unraveling. This conversation is with Emma Smallbone. I'm really honored to have you here, Emma.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
I'm just going to share a little bit about you for our guests. So Emma connects people to their ancestors, their higher selves, and the collective to connect deeply to their authentic self and learn to walk the path between the shadow and light. Emma is head woomate at the Woo Shop and loves helping people find the tools to strengthen their intuition and connect to self. Lastly, Emma guides people to grow their business authentically with purpose in the Coven, a mastermind for spiritually minded entrepreneurs. And when I read your bio, I was like, Emma is like a soul like connection, because I love the fact that you are owning the multi-passionate, multifaceted elements of everything, and I just love that. So welcome, Emma. Aww,
thank you for having me. I still love that when you reached out to me, I had thought about you like literally the day before, going, maybe I should interview Lauren on this like new thing that I'm gonna do, and then you reached out to me. So yes, it's destiny.
I love it. And it's actually the first time we've actually spoken like face to face, Zoom to Zoom, you know, which feels really weird, because I feel like we've spoken before. Well, we probably have, but you know, not in this lifetime.
Our souls have spoken to each other.
Exactly. So I'm just going to start by pulling us a card, just to see what's bubbling up for today. Oh, we have high flying and a butterfly on the card.
Oh, transformation, right? Mm-hmm. Like a metamorphosis. I really feel like we're going through that.
Yeah, just a little. Yeah, I definitely am feeling this. And I think we were speaking before we started recording about this, like the speed at which things seem to be shifting and changing at the moment is like, it's hard to keep up with like myself.
Yeah. Well, how you were talking about how I'm multifaceted. Somebody once said that I was a Renaissance woman, and I was like, that is it. Cause it's almost like I can't decide. And I don't think we should decide. I think we should just allow all the energy that's within us to just come out, and whatever that is. And you know, I really fight against, because I'm a rebel at heart. I fight against this idea of picking one job and doing it for the rest of your life. I've never been satisfied with that idea, because I've always had this creativity. I went to fine art school and did a lot of creative careers in my life. And I just think, how boring would it be if you just got stuck in that one track and just kept moving down that path? I mean, it's probably the ADHD and all the wonderful things that I have going on inside my head. But yeah, I just, so many things that I want to do.
I'd love to know actually, like how you got to the point of actually being very accepting of that, because I've fought it quite a lot because of, you know, the old expectations and conditioning around, you know, you choose a career and you work your way in through it. And I've never been it's never felt aligned for me to do that. And I've shifted a lot. But how have you found that journey? How has it brought you to where you are now?
You know, I think I'm really, really lucky because I'm the most stubborn human being on the face of the planet. And if you try to tell me something, even when I was 5 years old, it was like a hard no. Like, that is not the way that I'm going to choose to show up as a five-year-old. And my mom always laughs at me because she's like, why do you feel so shocked that you turned out this way? And I always go, why am I like one of the few that has this figured out? And she's like, you've been like this since day one. Like, you've never listened to anybody else, and you've never. So I do, there's a piece of me, you know, I believe in the old soul thing. I think I've done this a couple times. I think I've done this a lot of times. And I think this version of me just decided I'm not doing that anymore. You know, when I was 15, I took a co-op placement as a medical photographer, which as a woman, for one, in my time, like I'm turning 45 on the 27th on a full moon. Yay. So I've been around the block a couple times, but I, you know, chose careers, I think, that were hard. Like, to be a woman in photography at the time that I did it was shocking to everybody. Like, when I started down that path, it was kind of like I was, you know, brushing shoulders with the old boys club all the time. And every single career path that I have chosen, there's been this constant pushback. Like, I was a college professor for 6 years and taught photography to graphic design students. And let me tell you, the higher education system as a teacher is quite toxic and very like that masculine toxicity stuff going on, like bravado. So I had to battle that. I had to battle it as a female photographer in an industry that was dominated by men. It's just everything I have ever done, the word in my head is persist. You know, you must persist. You must make, like, you must do the thing. And I don't know if that's my ancestors and, you know, the fight that I feel from them, like trying to accomplish things with like very little means, but it's just always, I've never questioned it. I've always been like, nope, I'm going to do photography. And I still remember when I chose to be a photographer, I moved to the big city of Toronto, lived in a tiny little bachelor apartment, and I waited for jobs. And as a photographer, you have to put yourself on hold. So a client will say, we want you, but we don't have the contract yet. So can you hold these 2 weeks? So you say yes, hoping that you get that job, and you have to refuse all other jobs. And then at the end of it all, they might say, sorry, we didn't get the contract. And then you're out 2 weeks' work. So, you know, you learned this resiliency and like how to hustle and how to find jobs in weird places. And you just picked up stuff. And I think being a creative allowed me to see that, okay, if I'm going to be a photographer, I have to do fine art. I have to do commercial photography. I have to be a portrait photographer. I have to do all these things on the path to become what I wanted to be. And I eventually had a very successful photography business. And actually, I stepped out of it at the top of my, and everybody was shocked. They're like, why did you leave? You're one of the, you know, at the time I was one of the highest paid wedding photographers in Ontario. I was getting international recognition for what I did. But it didn't feel like it was in alignment. And I have always been about, if I'm not feeling it, if I'm not passionate about it, if I'm not waking up every single day and excited to be doing what I'm doing, then I've got to find something else. So mediumship has always been in my life. You know, witchcraft has always been in my life. But I, like yourself, you know, society tells you, you can't do that for a job. Being a witch isn't a job. So I found a career where I could make money, which was photography, and I was always doing the intuitive stuff on the side. And eventually it got to a place where it was like, I was dragging my heels doing photography work and so excited to go and do my mediumship work that I was like, I need to give this a chance. I need to take a leap. And I went and had a Reiki session one day with this amazingly talented healer locally here. And I showed up an hour early because of daylight savings time, because I'm horrible at tracking those things. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take myself to breakfast. So I went out for breakfast. And while I was sitting there, I wrote my retirement letter within like 15 minutes of sitting down. And I just went, post.
Oh, and I, wow.
Yeah, and there was no like workup to it. I just announced to the world, hey, you all know that I've been going down this other path, this spiritual path, and it really lights me up, but I need to give this a chance. I need to take the leap. I need to show, and I've always been about showing the world that you can make different choices. And if I don't take those leaps and if I don't show it through my actions, then how is anything else ever gonna shift? Like if you just sit there and go, well, ooh, wouldn't that be good if I did that? But then you don't actually do it. How are you being a leader? How are you showing anybody that the world can change if you're not changing yourself? So that was it. I think 3 months later, I hung up my cameras, which is crazy because there's like $30,000 worth of camera equipment sitting in my back room, which I pull out like once in a blue moon. And I leapt right into doing mediumship full time and was booked solid for years. So yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy ride, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Oh my God, I love all of that. Oh, where to even start? You describe yourself as a seer.
Yeah.
Can you just explain a little bit more about that for anyone sure. not familiar with it?
Yeah, I used to use the term medium because it was the term that everybody understood. And I thought if I used my traditional term, then nobody would understand. And people still don't. Like people ask all the time, what the hell is a seer? But it makes more sense for me because mediumship is about talking to your ancestors. That is just one thing. But again, I'm all the things. I'm not just this one thing. And a seer sees all. So we are connected to the past, the present, and the future. We can see possible outcomes. And this is one thing that I'm not a predictive. I mean, yes, some of the things that I say do eventually happen, but I'm a huge believer in free will. I think we have a choice. I think there's several timelines that are an option to all of us at any given time. But you get to choose which path you go down. And I think I'm just very lucky that I learned that a long time ago because I'm like, ooh, I can see all these paths that are an option to me. Which one do I want to take today? And as a seer, I give people that ability to see their options and, you know, see what their possible growth is, because I work a lot with corporations and people in bigger business to see where things are going. And if you actually research seers, Napoleon had a seer, most kings and queens had seers. And the one thing about seers though, is they were considered in high regard because they could decide all of these things or see all of these things. But then if anything goes wrong, you're the first one to be offed. So it's a very precarious like situation to be in. And it's something that I still feel that lineage of like, ooh, should I tell this one? Is it like, is this going to be the thing that offs me? Because that energy is there, right? And I saw all the Trump stuff. I saw all that, like all of this stuff I've been seeing for years. And I was talking about it 3 or 4 years ago. And people were like, you're nuts. I'm like, okay, yep. I'm like, there's going to be a civil war. There's going to be fires. There's going to be all of these things. I said, I can feel that the country is just, there's unrest. And then I think it was last July, I saw that it was going to be hard for him to leave, that he was going to throw a little pity party for himself. And essentially, I mean, today is the, what is it? The impeachment trials or whatever. So, you know, we can see things that are not just related to our ancestors in spirit. We can see all things. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a pretty cool gift.
Yeah. I love that. And that, did that lead you into the Woo Shop? Is that, or yes. Did the Woo Shop come first? What, like, how did that work?
So the Woo Shop came out of the fact that when I was meeting with clients, I was like saying like, hey, hold this crystal, because I can tell your energy is like super off right now. Just sit there. And at the end of the session, they never wanted to give it back, which I was totally fine with because I love giving gifts. But I was like, oh, wait a second, because I'm an entrepreneur as a photographer and had that business kind of thing. I'm like, why would I send them to a store that A, I don't necessarily know where the products have come from, and I don't know if I could trust the sources, but also why would I send money away? Like, that makes no sense to me. So I just started with a very small table of crystals, and people, you know, a dollar a piece. And then people were asking about the decks that I used. So I started bringing in decks. Then I started, you know, making candles and essential oil blends. And it has slowly grown over time. And this year, because of the craziness of COVID, we actually doubled our sales, which is kind of mind blowing to me, because, you know, we all panicked at the beginning, like, what are we going to do? Like, there's never going to, you know, nobody's going to be able to come in the store. But it's actually been a huge blessing, the shop. So I just let it grow as it needs to grow. I actually, it's one of the businesses that I've never really had to worry about, that I've never really had to hustle. I have a social media manager that does all the posting for it. But aside from that, we don't advertise. We don't, like, there's nothing pushing that forward except the universe saying, hey, the Woo Shop needs to exist. And, you know, I'm really good at taking pictures of products, so that really helps.
So all the things that you've done before have all, like, supported you.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the whole piece of life, is you have to look at all these careers that you're doing, even if you don't love them, as something you can put in your tool belt. Like, in high school, I left home probably, I was 16, and I moved out to go to fine art high school because you had to be in town and my parents lived in the country. So I moved into this tiny little apartment while I'm going to fine art school, and I had to pay rent. I had to, like, so I was working full-time jobs while doing all of this and learning that, like, okay, this is how, I remember, actually, I got hired by Carlton Cards one summer to redo all their displays. So I would go into a store and tear down all their card displays and put it all back up and, like, organize. And, but even that, like, I take from that, because it was like, okay, this is how you do a display, and this is where you put things, and this is, and that has rolled into what I'm doing now. And I don't think there's any job that you ever do that is worthless. You always learn something, and you're collecting all these tools along your lifetime, and then you eventually arrive at this place where you could use them all.
Yeah, right? I love that. Yeah. I really resonate with that a lot. Like, my journey has been, like, not the same at all. there's similarities, you know. Like, I had my own, I've always been an entrepreneur. Like, I set up my own business at 21 and really let it grow organically. I created a marketing agency, and amazing. I did that until I was 30, and then I kind of did a bit like you did. It was like, it was actually at the, you know, it was kind of at the biggest it could be in some ways. And I had an opportunity to either expand it and keep growing it or not. And I was like, nope, not right. Like everything in my life was like, this is not, you're not supposed to continue this. But to everyone around me, it was terrifying. And to me, you know, I think I really definitely took on some of that fear as well. And it's taken me now, like I'm going to be 38, I think, this year. And it's been like 8 years of trying loads of different things and like coming to accept that I am not just one thing. I'm not just a coach. I'm not just a yoga teacher. I'm not just like, I can't be one of those things. I've tried to do each thing individually. And every time I've just been like, no, can't do this. So I really resonate with like, that's why I'm so drawn to you.
Well, and you know, I find it really interesting. Like even with myself, I'm really struggling with the labels of it all. Because, you know, I'm a healer, I'm a seer, I'm a medium, I'm a witch, I'm a, like all of these things. I've been a sex educator. I've been like, I've had so many jobs, and so many career paths that I can't really put a label on it, but people want labels. People want to figure out how to define you. And it was funny because I won a one-on-one session with John Edward, the medium. And this was, gosh, how many years ago was that? That was probably 8 years ago. And he said to me, he's like, because I used to be called the barefoot medium, because when I do mediumship, when I do anything, I can't wear shoes. So I'm always barefoot. So expect to see my toes if you come to my house. But he said to me, he's like, what's with this barefoot medium crap? He's like, just use your name. I'm John Edwards. You're Emma Smallbone. Just use it. And I fought that for a really long time because I thought if I didn't have medium in the title of what I did, people would have zero interest in me because who's Emma? Like, who cares about Emma Smallbone? What's Emma Smallbone? But what I'm realizing now is people actually are like, that's a cool friggin' name. And what's this Emma Smallbone? And like, actually without the labels, people get more interested. They're like, oh, she does this, but she does this. And then there's this deeper interest in what you do. If you're, you know, a medium, you're just one in a million of all the other mediums. And I finally, you know, switched over to Emma Smallbone. And then that was almost when everything kind of exploded for me, which made me laugh because I'm like, okay, John, you were right. I was wrong. And that there's quite a few things in that reading that he said to me that I like, because again, you can't make me do anything. I'm like tough as nails. I have to come to that place on my own. But every single thing that he said that I should do or that I need to shift away from or I need to change, he was so bang on. It was ridiculous. And I'm like, I should have just listened to him 8 years ago.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't have learned all the things you've learned along the journey.
Exactly. I had to be ready to be Emma Smallbone.
Yeah. Did you find like there was a bit of a like people always talk about like coming out of the spiritual closet and like owning witch, owning medium, owning seer, owning all these different words, let's not call them labels, but like all these different pieces. How did you find that? Because like that's definitely something where I'm at the moment is like stepping away from the yoga teacher meditation and more into like priestess, mystic, poet, you know, like those excite me. And the other words have just zero energy in them at all for me anymore. But how did you find that was challenging? Or again, was it just like, no, I'm just going to do it?
Every single time I have like a little bit of like, ooh, like, are you sure you want to do this? But I have a couple, really funny, like the mediumship one was my hardest because I went from being a photographer to being a medium. And it was the first time that I had like come out of the woo closet. And I actually had a bunch of people interview me about it because they couldn't believe like this crazy switch. And they said, well, what gave you the ability to do this? And I'm like, because it's who I am. And I have to be honest. I can't not share. I I don't know if it's the manifester in me or whether it's the Pisces, like, I don't know what it is, but like, I have to tell the world what it is that I'm doing right now. Because it just feels really important. And I know for me growing up, because I've seen spirit my whole entire life, I had nobody. There was no, John Edward, which is why it's so amazing that I got a reading with him. He was the only person I knew. I would come home after school and I would watch his show Crossing Over. And I was like, oh, there's other people that see stuff. Like, my mom knew that I saw spirit, but like, we never had conversations about it. You know, I would tell kids and then regret telling kids, because you're like, oh shit, like, now I'm really the weird kid. But over time, you just get so used to people not reacting. Like, when I came out as a medium when I was at the college teaching, and I went and asked a couple other professors, and I said, hey, like, is this gonna ruin my career at the college if I tell everybody that I'm a medium? And the one guy was like, no, it's just gonna make you really cool. Like, everybody's gonna wanna be in your class and everybody's gonna wanna take your classes. And that for me was just like, whew, okay. And that wasn't the first time. When I talked about it when I was a wedding photographer, I once again went around and talked to a bunch of people in the industry. And I said, what do you think people are gonna say if I say this? And everybody was like, now I want to have coffee with you, because this is like, this is a super cool skill. Like, people are going to want to. And I was actually somewhat disappointed that there was no flack, because I was ready for a fight. Like, I was ready for somebody to say, oh, that's not real. Like, why would you choose to do that? Nothing. There wasn't even one rebuttal. There wasn't one nasty email. There wasn't one like negative voice in the bunch. Cause trust me, I've got enough negative voices in here. Like, the universe knows I can only take so many pieces. But I think when that happens, and especially for me with all these waves of, you know, changes and shifts and announcements, and like, I'm a witch, and and I'll tell you about the witch story, still makes me laugh. When I tell all these things, there's not really a reaction. There's not really any. So to me, it's important, because I want that 8-year-old girl that's struggling, seeing spirit and having nobody to talk to, have somewhere to come. It's why I started my group Woo Culture, so all the weirdos could come together in one place and talk about stuff. It's why I share so openly, because I know there's girls and boys like me that don't have a role model, that have no idea where they're going. And for me, all of this as a child led to depression and anxiety. So I don't want anybody to ever have to go through that. You know, depression is hard enough, but if you have depression and there's voices in your head, who do you talk to? You can't talk to doctors, because they're gonna like medicate you and tell you, you know. And I always say to people, you know, do some research. What are the voices saying to you? Like, if there's a negative bent on it, you may want to go talk to a doctor. Because spirit is pretty much uplifting 90% of the time. They give you warnings every once in a while, but nothing like dire. But I want people to see this. Like, I want to normalize death, dying, you know, goddess worship, you know, witchcraft, all of these things. Because to me, they've always been normal. They've always been a part of my life. There hasn't been a time where this hasn't existed in my wheelhouse. So, you know, making these leaps and making these announcements, I think for one millisecond, it's hard when you first do it. Like, I'll tell you the story about the witch piece. I was being interviewed on Chris Ann's in her, the branding and magic course that she does, Chris Ann Donnelly. And she said, so there's something you want to say to the world. And I was like, yeah, because this is when, like, this was probably 4 years ago, before everybody, like, it became trendy. And I was like, yeah, I'm a, and then the sound, because my internet, it went, I'm a witch. And I'm like, oh, I guess everybody really heard that. And I just thought it was the most hilarious thing. It was like there was this big exclamation mark around me being a witch on Chris Ann's interview. But, you know, and with that, I just laughed. Like, you can't not laugh. You can't not, like, obviously Spirit was in control of the microphone at that moment and really wanted to make it clear that I was coming out of the witch closet. But it, you know, every single time it's been something along those lines. People laugh or people just go, this is so cool. Or, and I think people are so worried. I see it in my group. They're like, I can't tell my parents. I can't tell. But at the same time, it's none of their business. You know, I always think it's about keeping yourself safe, because there are some people I know, I've come up against them, that think what I do is like Satan worship and they think it's the devil. I've lost friends. You know, it isn't the easiest path to walk, but for me, it's the truest path. Like, I have to do this. It's in my blood. It's in my bones. It's in everything that I do. Every piece of my life has it intertwined somewhere. And if you're not living your authentic life, why are you even here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, yeah, that's a biggie.
I know, not to like boom.
I love it. I think I think often we create so many stories and beliefs around what we think, you know, and it doesn't have to necessarily be coming out as a witch or as a medium. It's, you know, like even when I shifted from doing PR and marketing, which is very safe and, you know, people understand that, to being a yoga teacher or a health coach, you know, like those were like, what is that? Like, this is so crazy. This is such a weird thing to do. And like, now I'm like, that is boring. No offense to anyone who is doing that. But for me, it's like, that is so like such a safe label now. And now I'm like, okay, what's next? What can I shock people with next? But I think we build up these stories of like what the expectation of people and actually worry maybe that we think that people are more bothered about us than perhaps we are. Perhaps they actually are. And
yeah.
Everyone's got their own stuff and they're like, oh, okay. Might be a bit like, oh, interesting. And on to the rest of my day.
Yeah. My husband doesn't get what I do at all. Like, we're so completely opposite. We've been together 20 years. He, from day one, knew I was a weirdo, you know, but every single time that I go, okay, this is what he's like, are you sure? Like, is that what you want to do? But he always supports me. You know, I went back home to my family in England 2 years ago. And while I was away, he built the shop.
Oh, wow.
Like, I know. So his vacation was spent making my shop. So he supports me. He doesn't get it, you know? And I think that's the other thing too, is a lot of people come out of the wooey closet and like want that like conversion. Like, they think everybody has to believe what they believe too. And they totally white knuckle it. Like, why can't my partner just, you know, honor Odin the way that I honor Odin? And it's like, it's not his thing. Yeah. Like, it's okay to be in a relationship and have opposing views on things. And you don't, nobody, not one soul has to believe what you believe.
Yeah, that's a really lovely, like, good way of looking at it, actually. Because, I mean, I've been similar. Like, my husband is so not into the same things as me. And for a while, I was really like, oh, you know, like, I want you to be interested in this. And I want you to come to a yoga class. And I want you to meditate with me. And I'm like, I really, like, this is my thing. He has his things. And actually, like, it works. It works fine. And we don't need to have the same interest. In fact, I think it would actually be more challenging if we were both like interested in the same thing. So but the support is there.
Yeah, the support's there. And that's all that matters. Like, if somebody can love you for your weirdness, like I'm constantly saying, like, oh, you love your little weirdo today. Like, I, you know, he loves me, and that's all that matters. And there's this really weird piece in the spiritual industry that you have to have a spiritual relationship. And that really frustrates me. And, you know, I was taking this one course and the girl was like, well, is he a hell yes? And I'm like, well, yeah. Well, can you, everything you do, you have to do together, everything, like, and I'm like, ew, no, I need my own space. Like one of the things being an empath and a seer, and I need a lot of downtime. The last 2 days I've, my son calls my bedroom the bunker, because like I'll hold up in there, like read some books and have a cup of coffee or tea or whatever. And I just, the boys go about what they need to do. And I just have my downtime in my room and I'm separate. I couldn't imagine if my husband wanted to come to a meditation circle or if he wanted to come and do chanting with me. I'd be like, ooh, you're in my bubble. Get out of my bubble. Like I need my space.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And you can still, I find it really interesting how like we can still teach each other in a relationship so much when we have, like, you know, we have things in common, but we also have a lot of things not in common. And but actually in, like, you can teach so much about love and about support and about holding space for each other. And, you know, he holds space for me amazingly, but it's not in the way I hold space for someone else, you know, like there's so many, there's so many differences in it, but there is so much richness in the differences. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, the two things that we kind of say that we give each other, my husband taught me how to manage money. You know, I'm useless. I have some severe learning disabilities, so I can't remember numbers. So even if I'm transposing numbers from a notebook to the computer, they're going to be wrong. Like I should just not touch numbers. It's just not allowed. So he has like helped me ground down into like being more practical. And then I allow him to dream. I show him that there's possibilities and what we can, you know, create together in this world, because he is, you know, he's my perfect client because he's got like those like blinders on a little and doesn't see that magical world that I'm living in. So I, you know, and I'm not pushy about it. I'm very patient. We've been together 20 years and I would say it's only been the last 5 that he's kind of been like, oh, I think what she's doing is like, you know, this is good for the planet and for people and she should keep doing this. Before that, it was like, what is that weird stuff? And that's the other thing. People think that once you drop into this energy and you start doing this work, everybody's going to hop on board and everybody should support you and everybody should be like your cheerleaders, but they're still just trying to figure out what it is that you're doing.
Yeah. And it's almost just having to make peace with that, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, we shouldn't force people to stretch. People need to stretch into these spaces on their own time, in their own way, in their own power, or else it's not going to be authentic. You know, all of this stuff that, you know, it's one of the things that I've been noticing lately in our industry, all these TikTok videos and like the instant like magic pill, like, oh, you do this one thing and your life will be perfect. If you manifest this one thing, your life will be perfect. That's not how this works. You know, I teach courses on shadow work, and shadow work, like I was saying to a friend yesterday, it's like moon magic, check. Candle magic, check. Shadow work, done. And like, that's what it feels like the industry is about right now, like, oh, I'm going to do all these things and then I'm done and I'm healed and I'm perfect. No. Mm-mm. Magic and all healing is messy and it lasts for fucking ever. Like, I will forever be doing shadow work. It will never end. And I'm totally okay with that because you're becoming a better human being with every single step.
Yeah. For those who might be like, so I'm quite familiar now with shadow work. It's something I've allowed into my life through a lot of gritted teeth. But yeah, I think actually motherhood has really helped me embrace shadow work even more so than I was before. But
indeed,
it's one of those words that I know brings fear into people thinking, you know, I think maybe people's expectations of what shadow work is, it's not, you know, it's not comfortable, but how do you explain shadow work and also the benefits? Because I have found shadow work is the portal to the most incredible growth in my life, the most incredible things that have happened in my life through facing those parts of me. But how do you coax someone towards shadow
into
work?
It?
Yeah.
Well, you definitely have to be ready. I do think that you can't jump into the witchy wooey world and go, first thing, I'm going to do some shadow work. No. That is not, because it's, I would say it's deep therapy. So, but in, you're becoming accountable to yourself. That's the biggest piece, is being accountable for your actions, for your part to play in things, for your response to things. And what we do is we look at all the pieces of ourself that we don't necessarily love. You know, are you judgmental? Are you toxic when it comes to friendships? Because we all know that we don't like to admit that maybe we had a part to play in that one friendship breaking up, or all those friendships breaking up, or, you know, all of those things. And for me, that was where it started. I have some severe abandonment issues. I have, you know, worthiness issues, things where it's yes, I look really sparkly on the outside, and what I present to the world looks like I'm super confident, and then I got it all together, and then all my ducks in a row. But in here, I'm my fingers are gripping the edge of the table going, are people going to like this? Are people going to show up? So what made me come to that place where I doubt myself more than everybody else on the planet? Right? We're diving into that. And where did that start? We go back to childhood. You know, I've wrote a book called The Barefoot Medium. And in there, I talk about this journey of, you know, being told I was stupid, being told I was lazy, being told I'll never fit in, being told I should just give up. And all of those voices over time become your voice. Because instead of pushing it away and going, that's not for me, we take it on board. You know, we're sensitive, especially if you're an empath or a sensitive being, that becomes part of us, those voices. And it's about unraveling those voices, untangling those voices and putting them in their place and going, that's not my voice. That was somebody else's voice. But my part to play in it was accepting the voices. So I no longer can accept those voices. I'm going to put up a boundary and say, if I hear that again, that's a hard no for me. And then you go down the path towards another piece. Is it about your anger? Is it about your anxiety? Is it about, what pieces? And you're constantly pulling these pieces up and observing them. You're not reliving them. That is one thing that I want people to understand about shadow work. This is not about reliving trauma. And if anybody tells you that shadow work is about reliving the trauma, run in the opposite fucking direction. Because I'm seeing a lot of this in the spiritual industry, and I actually did a rant about it, that, you know, we shouldn't be triggering people and then leaving them to their own devices. Because that's not what healers do.
No, do you think that's because people are not trauma informed and not actually understanding? That's something that's come up for me a lot. I'm very grateful that my most recent coaching certification was trauma informed and really opened my eyes to that. And I now seeing so much that is not trauma informed, and that it's not, well, maybe it's even just trauma aware, just not aware that you can re-traumatize someone by just, even talking about something. If they go back into the story, that is not going to heal them. And if their nervous systems can't support them through that, then it's damaging and it's dangerous. And
yeah,
I think, there's a lot of I have a lot to say about that.
I have a lot to say about it too. I really do think it's making very clear who is truly intuitive and who's not in this realm. I think there's been a lot of truth told this year, because how can you heal somebody and be triggering them and not understand what they're feeling? Like, if you're to do this work, I have to be, when I sit across from a client and we're pulling up some of this thoughts and feelings and emotions that are really hard for them, I know the instant that we're pushing the boundary on what is unsafe for them. I can feel it in their body.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of people out there doing this work, going on Pinterest, pulling off a PDF that says shadow work, rebranding it and going, I'm a shadow worker. I'm going to teach you about your shadow. Meanwhile, they haven't done any shadow work. They have no intuitive connection to their clients. They're not understanding, you know, how far they can push them or how far they need to retreat when something comes up. And it's very frustrating because, I mean, I feel like 2020 was the year of the trigger. Mm-hmm. Everybody was triggering everybody else publicly. They were trying to cancel each other. They were trying, like, there was a lot of trauma done on the internet in 2020. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to me, I became very aware of the fact that the spiritual industry is doing a lot of harm. Mm-hmm. And it makes me really frustrated because, you know, especially the people like, how long have I been doing this? 12, 13 years. And, you know, that's not the longest, but I've been doing this for so long and watching the industry kind of crescendo into this total disaster of like everybody being triggered. I think there is purpose in it because I see these waves every couple of years of the false prophets showing up and us all going like, stay away from this. But yeah, shadow work is so amazing. Like, I want to share it with the world because all of those things that you hate about yourself, that you are frustrated with, or you're like, this is holding me back and why can't I move forward? Like, my worthiness piece has been around since I think the day I was born. I believe it was ancestral stuff because of where my family comes from and what our backgrounds are. And I have been able to work through that and finally get to a place where I'm like, no, I deserve this. I deserve to have it. And the craziness is that's when the abundance for me really flipped, because it is about a mindset. If you want to hack abundance and manifest and do all of that stuff, do some shadow work first.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, it's definitely the plate, like it's had the most impact on everything I've done to finally like surrender into, okay, fine. I'm going to look at you. I'm going to look at the pieces of you, of myself that are not pretty in inverted commas, and they're not, and they're messy and they're chaotic. And actually in doing that, like that's where like the self-love has come from. Like, it has not come from all of the external things that help. They help, they're anchors, they're nice reminders. They do help in a way, but until I started to not even love, but accept the parts of me that were angry, that were frustrated, that were irritable, like starting to own like the, you know, own my judgmental side and own the fact that I am, you know, like I'm fiery and I will lose my temper and I will say shitty things sometimes. Like, when I started to own that, then the self-love was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm not going to attack myself for thinking something because I'm actually seeing it through compassionate eyes because I understand it. Just getting to know, you don't have to like it necessarily at first, although now I kind of do. I think it's just like getting to know and letting them be seen, letting these parts of you be seen where they've been like shoved down, like as far away as possible for a long time.
Well, and I think too, we don't, you know, it gives value to these pieces of ourselves. I think that's, you know, the biggest thing that I've realized is some of these things, we need them to keep us safe. So, you know, we constantly are putting up these walls to keep ourselves safe because we want, but eventually we have to strip down those walls to truly keep ourselves safe. We just didn't have the tools previously to actually open it up. And that's why I say not everybody's ready for shadow work. Like, you really have to check in with yourself. Do I have the tools? In my course, The Shedding, I teach 2 months of intuition and getting to know yourself first.
Yeah.
And then we step into shadow work, because you can't just jump into it without knowing who you are. And it's interesting. Even the way that people refuse to do the work in the course, because shadow work, I know that, you know, I think I have 50 people enrolled in the course, and I bet you there's 5 that are truly digging into that really deep work, because it's hard to push your boundaries. It's hard to like go to those places of, you know, one of the things we do is a body scan. You do a body scan every single day for that first month, and you tune in and you go, oh, where am I holding some of this energy? And you're noticing that you're holding it in your shoulders, or you notice it that you're holding it in your gut. So if we're holding it in our shoulders, that can be, you're carrying the weight of everybody else's burdens, right? Mm-hmm. Why are we carrying the weight of everybody else's burdens? And then when you start to go, oh, wait a second, I'm carrying stuff that isn't even mine. What would happen if I put down everybody else's problems? Mm. Whew. Okay, today I feel so much better if I put down those things. I was carrying stuff I didn't know. So then you're like, okay, my body's feeling a little bit better. What would happen if I never picked up those things again? What if I just started saying no? What if I just started, and it's like a trail of breadcrumbs. It's not, like I said, it's not a silver bullet. Like, you know, it drives me crazy. My course is 6 months long because that's the minimum I could do.
Yeah.
I think if a shadow work course is less than like, well, I think it has to be 6 months, because you need to do the prep work at the beginning, and then you need to leave space at the end of the course to really have a place for people to fall if they're struggling with what they uncovered. So if you do a 2-week or a month or a 6-week shadow course, like essentially you've just opened up everybody's triggers and left them to do whatever it is that they're going to do.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me, is a lot of people are stepping into this and thinking, oh, shadow work is something you can do in 2 weeks. I've got some amazing printables for you. We're really going to journal this shit out. But we need longer. You need longer to heal. It's a lifetime's work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes like when you're at the place where you want so badly to like move forward, you will do, and this is a whole nother conversation, but this is where like the marketing, like people prey on like these people that are so red, like they are desperate to change and shift. And they'll be like, yeah, we can, you know, like we can do this in 6 weeks, but actually what they're going to do is, yeah, as you say, like open up all this stuff, and they don't have the capacity to integrate any of it. No. I ran a 4-week program on nervous system, like called Grounded, before Christmas. And cool. It was a real like download from spirit, from the divine, to say like, it kind of was the first time I've run it, but it's now it feels like it's the foundation of any healing work, any transformation. If people do not understand their nervous systems and understand how to soothe themselves and to support themselves, transformation is not possible. Like it will, you can force yourself so far, but then you're going to come back probably worse than you were, because you will have like traumatized yourself in the process. So
yeah,
like I just think that, I think I love what you're saying about like the time and giving yourself the time and knowing that it is an ever unfolding, unraveling journey. Like there's no place that you get to. I started, I suppose, my more healing work nearly 10 years ago now. And it's a long haul, but it's like the process is beautiful on the way. So I think, and I have so much still to unravel, like a lot. I will always be unraveling.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of made peace with that now.
I think we do, as spiritual people, you realize that once you get into it, you're like, there is no check. We've been told that there's a checklist in life that you go to school, you find the love of your life, you get married, you have two kids, you buy a house, you have a career in quotes. You know, we think that's what we should be doing. But I always say to people, heal yourself first. Like, how do you know? Like, we should be teaching kids how to heal in grade school. This should be and that would be my ultimate goal, is to teach kids this work when they're like in public school, like before they even get into high school, because we're not setting kids up to really understand the world. We're telling them, be nice to everybody, accept every friend that comes your way. You know, we're not teaching them boundaries. We're not teaching them energetic responsibility. There's so many things that could benefit kids. Like, my son has been coming home after school and he's just been like, bleh. And he's like, they just went back this week and his energy is so intense. And when he comes in that door, I feel this like wall. So we sat down yesterday and I said, Henry, we need to start a grounding routine when you come home. Because you are coming in the door and that energy is just too intense for mom. And we need to do a routine. He's like, okay. He's like, what are we going to do? Are we going to meditate? Are we going to like sit with crystals? Are we going to like, he knows what the tools are, but we have to actually put it in place. And if we taught all kids how to do this, how to regulate their emotions.
Yes.
And, you know, and how to, we would have a more informed society. We would have a more balanced society. And I've always believed that I knew it started with me. Like, I knew that I couldn't let go of whatever it was. I didn't know what it was. I didn't even have a name for what I was doing, but it was like, I needed to hold on to it. I needed to keep it safe. And when I had my son, like you were saying, having a child changes everything. You start to see in them what you went through as a child, and then you want to understand it more. You want to like connect to it more, so then they don't have to go through what you went through. And I, having a child, which was kind of like a little miracle story for me, because I'm not supposed to be able to have kids, I needed my son. He healed me when he was in my womb. He heals me every single day because he shows me as a child, right? And I always say to people, because we had decided not to have children, like, don't ask us, we're not going to have kids. We know it's going to be a struggle. I don't want to go through the heartache. Just, and then this like little miracle baby pops up out of nowhere and does all this miraculous work. No pressure, child. But, you know, I say to people, if you're considering not having children, just wait. Like, let your body speak to you. Because it literally, I woke up one night, I was 35, and I remember slamming my hand down on the bed and going, holy fuck, I need to have a baby. And that was never anything in my body before. As a child, I said to my mom, I want to be a nun, because that was actually the only way that I thought of that you could not have a child.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And that was probably when I was like 9 or 10, I was telling that to my mom, like, how do I like, you know, go hide in a monastery somewhere, so I like never have to like do this thing that everybody else wants to do. And now I just see how much of a gift it is, how much of a, you know, gift that it's healing. And if you, you know, if you were like me, where I was like, well, I can't have kids, like, find kids. find kids to experience the magic of innocence, of joy, of like be the best aunt you can possibly be or the best cousin or whatever. But children, I think, are the key to our healing.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, that feels like a really lovely place to wrap up.
Yeah.
I'd love to just know if there's one practice or ritual or something that you are doing at the moment to really soothe yourself. Is there something that someone else might be able to connect with, or just as a practice or something that you do?
Yeah, every single day I check in with myself to see where I'm at energetically. It's funny because I learned this trick from a TV show called Halt and Catch Fire. And it's like, so not wooey. It's about like the tech industry in Silicon Valley. But there was this guy in it and he had a book and he would write down how he was feeling that day because I can't remember if he had a heart attack or like he was monitoring his physical self. And he would just put a number beside a letter. So it was like D for depression or like P for pain or whatever. And I do that every single day. Because what happens is when we get so caught up in the everyday of like 9 to 5, like, oh, got to get my kid off to school, or I got to feed myself, or we get distracted and disconnected from our bodies. And when we can tap in and go, oh, how am I feeling today? Oh yeah, there's some like anxiety in my chest, or, ooh, my left knee really aches today, or any of those things. It's a grounding practice. You're out of your head and you're back into your body. And it's super simple. Mm-hmm. It's not complicated. It's something that just becomes a part of your daily routine. You know, the other thing that I do in the shower every single day is I do the Reiki brush off and I say, I release any negative thoughts, feelings, and emotions that may be attached to me. Every day. You have to release that energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I love the simplicity of those. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing.
You're so welcome.
Where can people find, they are drawn to work with you or to find out more about you? Where can they find you?
So super easy. emmasmallbone.com.
Excellent.
And I'm on Instagram as Emma Smallbone and the Woo Shop.
So. Excellent. I will pop all the links in the show notes. Excellent. As well. Oh, this has been such a lovely conversation. Like, oh, so many juicy bits. And I've loved getting to know more about you. So thank you so much for sharing so openly.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You are welcome. Any last parting words that you feel you need to share?
I just think it's, you know, never give up. Chase your dream. Like, know that if it's for you, it will always find you. You don't have to chase it.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. thank you so much.
So welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unraveling. If this has sparked your interest and you want to dive in deeper, head over to laurenbarber.co. to access more resources, including blogs, meditations, and previous shows. You can also discover more about sharing sacred space with me in my group, memberships, and one-to-one offerings. I would be so grateful if you can share this episode with anyone who might need to hear the words too. And if you have a moment, it would mean the world to me if you can subscribe and leave a review on your podcasting platform. If you feel called to connect with me on a more regular basis, then please do join me over on my Instagram account at laurenbarber.co. Until next time, I wish you love and gentleness on this beautiful but sometimes chaotic journey of unraveling.